Bow, Scratch, and Chloride rode along the trail until they were at the spot where the wagon had been when the road agents opened fire. Between the deadfall on one side of the trail and the thick stand of trees on the other side of the creek. When they reached the trees, they swung down from their saddles again. Chloride held the reins of all three mounts this time while Bow and Scratch searched among the trees and examined the ground. After a few minutes, Scratch reappeared with something in his hand. He held it out to show Chloride.
We got a couple of hombres who smoke quirlies and one who favors cheroots.
And at least one gent who prefers a pipe. I found where he knocked out the dottle.
How about brass?
I saw quite a few cartridges. They didn't bother to pick up the empties when they left. Looked like standard 44 rounds, though.
Yeah, same here. How about the horses?
I can show you where they held them. Come on.
Now that's more like it.
Scratch saw the welter of prints left by the horses while their owners were waiting for the Argosy gold wagon to come along. He knelt beside the tracks and studied them for long moments, filing away every detail, every nick and bent nail. Bow leaned over and peered at the hoof prints as well. His skill as a natural-born tracker wasn't quite as good as Scratch's, but he knew he would recognize some of those hoof prints if he saw them again.
You reckon the devils spend most of their time in Deadwood?
Sure. They probably have a hideout somewhere in the hills. But what good is a pile of stolen loot if all you do is squat in a cave somewhere all the time? Chloride said they were masked, and that he never got a good look at their faces. Until now, they've killed everybody they held up, so there weren't any witnesses left behind. They're hiding in plain sight, I'll bet, right there in the middle of Deadwood.
Yeah, probably pretending to be respectable citizens.
I wouldn't doubt it a bit. Think you can follow their back trail from here?
Well, maybe. If we're right about them coming from Deadwood, though, it ain't gonna do us much good. Chances are they got some rendezvous where they get together for their robberies, and from there the back trails will scatter out all over hell and gone.
Maybe the place where they rendezvous is the same place they cache their loot.
I didn't think about that. Yeah, you might be right, Bo. It's sure worth checking out anyway. Let's get Chloride and have a look.
They walked back through the trees and found the old-timer where they had left him, still holding the two horses and the mule.
Any luck?
We're gonna try to follow their back trail. You want to come with us, or would you rather go back to town?
I'd just as soon go on with you fellas, if that's all right.
Sure.
As Scratch reached for the reins of his horse, a sudden rifle shot caused Chloride's hat to leap from his head into the air. Bo's hand shot out, grabbed Chloride's arm, and swung him deeper into the trees.
Hunt some cover!
Scratch snatched his hat off his head and slapped it across his horse's rump, causing the animal to take off running. Bo's horse and Chloride's mule followed. That put their mounts out of the line of fire. But it also put the Texans' Winchesters out of reach, because the rifles were still in their saddle boots. They had their handguns and the extra ammunition they carried in their shell belts and pockets, but that was all. Chloride had scrambled behind one of the tree trunks. Bo and Scratch hurried to find cover.
You hit?
Nope. How about you?
No, they didn't wing me either. Chloride!
I'm fine, but this is the second day in a row I've been shot at, and I don't like it.
Neither do we. What are we gonna do about it?
You see where those bushwhackers are holed up?
Not yet. I was too busy getting out of the way of those bullets.
Yeah, me too.
How about that deadfall on the other side of the trail? Just because they weren't there yesterday, that don't mean they ain't today.
Nah, I don't think so. We've been within a couple of hundred yards of that big log for at least half an hour, searching the place where the wagon crashed and then hearing these trees. Nobody could have snuck up behind it without us noticing them.
Well, maybe some Apaches could have, but those varmints shooting at us ain't Apaches. And I reckon they couldn't have been hiding there before we got here, because they didn't have no way of knowing we were coming out here today.
That's not strictly true. We talked to quite a few people in town about how we wanted to try tracking down that gang of thieves. This would be the most likely place for us to start.
Yeah, but we only talked to folks at the various mining companies.
That word could have gotten around. Or maybe the devils are connected to one of the companies.
Hell's fire! That don't make no sense. All the big companies have been hit at least once. The robbers couldn't be working for any of them.
Unless that's what whoever is behind the devils wants everybody to think.
You might be onto something there, Bo. But we won't ever know if we get ourselves shot full of holes out here. You got any ideas about how we can turn the tables on them varmint?
Bo took his hat off and edged his head out far enough from behind the tree trunk to get a look at the terrain across the creek.
Look, you two. There's gun smoke coming from behind those rocks about halfway up the side of the gulch. The riflemen could have ridden along the top of the ridge, then worked their way down through the brush and the trees without us seeing them until they reached the rocks.
Yeah, I see them now. Sort of a long range for a handgun, but we might be able to get a little lead up there.
That old cap and ball of mine won't carry that far. It'll blow a big hole through a fella at close range, but it ain't much good over 20 feet.
Scratch, toss one of your Remingtons over the chloride along with some ammunition. That way the two of you can keep them occupied.
What are you gonna do?
I thought I'd work my way downstream through the trees until the trail goes around the next bend. Then I can cross the creek and start back in this direction.
Maybe get behind the varmints, huh? Well, that might work. You know how to work one of these Remingtons, chloride?
There ain't a gun I can't fire.
Yeah, well, you just be careful with it. I'm mighty fond of these hog legs.
Scratch gripped one of the revolvers by its long barrel, made sure the hammer was resting on an empty chamber, and sent the gun sailing through the air to land near Chloride's feet. Chloride scooped it up. Scratch tied a dozen rounds in his bandana and threw them over to the old-timer as well.
Space out your shots to make your bullets last longer. And if you could actually hit one or two of those bushwhackers, that'd be good too.
You just tend to your part of the deal. We'll tend to ours.
Chloride and Scratch squeezed the triggers on their Remingtons. Bo darted out of cover and ran deeper into the grove of trees. Several bullets hit the trunks around him. Bo used every bit of cover he could find to conceal what he was doing as he moved swiftly but carefully. The trees thinned out before Bo reached the bend in the trail. All he could do now was make a run for it and hope they didn't notice him. He broke out from cover and ran around the bend. No bullets whistled after him, and he took that as a good sign. After splashing across the creek, he stopped to lean against a slab-like boulder for a second and catch his breath. He recovered quickly and started up the slope. From time to time, he had to grab hold of a bush or a narrow tree trunk to help pull himself up. When he judged that he was about on the same level as the bushwhackers, he turned west and began making his way in their direction. The slowing down of shots from Scratch's Remingtons probably meant Scratch and Chloride were running low on ammunition, Bo thought. He needed to make his move soon. He was almost in position. Bo drew his Colt and slid forward from tree to rock to tree. He could look across the creek now and see the place where his friends had taken cover. As he crouched behind one of the pines, he peered around the trunk and saw four men kneeling behind rocks and firing across the stream with their Winchesters. Bo was a little surprised when he saw that all four wore bandanas tied around the lower halves of their faces and had their hats pulled down low. They were taking pains to conceal their identities even now. He had good shots at a couple of them, but the others would be trickier. No shots had come from across the creek for almost a minute now. That meant Scratch and Chloride had run out of bullets, or that they had both been wounded, maybe killed. Bo gripped the Colt tightly and swung out from behind the tree. His first shot smashed the arm of the closest rifleman, making him drop his weapon and pitch to the side as he clutched at the injury. Bo's second bullet ricocheted off a rock. The third one ripped through the body of the other gunman he could see. The other two masked men wheeled around, thrust their rifles past the rocks they were using as cover, and opened fire on the unexpected new threat. The slugs whipping around his head made Bo duck behind a tree again. Across the creek, the two Remingtons again began to roar. Scratch and Chloride had been biding their time, waiting for Bo to get into position and launch a counterattack. Now they sent bullets ricocheting into the rocks where the bushwhackers were hidden. Bo quickly thumbed fresh cartridges into the Colt to replace the ones he had fired.
Shit! Let's grab the others and get out of here!
Bo didn't want them to get away. He knelt, leaned out from behind the tree, and sent a couple of rounds whistling past the rocks. One of the men started cranking off shots towards Bo as fast as he could work his Winchester's lever. The barrage forced Bo to hunker down and try to make himself as small a target as possible. When the shooting stopped a few moments later, he heard men forcing their way through the brush. A quick look told him the two men he had wounded were gone. The one with the busted arm might have been able to get on his feet and flee without any help. One of the other two men must have dragged the more badly wounded hombre away. Sure enough, a few minutes later, he heard four horses somewhere higher on the ridge hurrying off into the distance. Bo waited for several minutes to be sure the bushwhackers really had fled and weren't doing a double back or setting another trap. When he was convinced they were gone, he called across the creek.
Scratch! Scratch, you all right?
Yeah, me and Chloride are fine. How about you?
I'm all right. Those hombres lit a shuck after I winged a couple of them.
Yeah, we'll lay low for now. We'll round up the horses.
Bo reloaded and waited, while Scratch and Chloride emerged from the trees on the other side of the creek and hurried upstream. The horses and Chloride's mule had headed that way when they ran off. Bo moved over to the rocks where the bushwhackers had hidden. He could see better from here. He kept an eye on the ridgeline, just in case the killers came back. Scratch and Chloride returned with the three mounts a few minutes later. Bo made his way down the slope and waded across the creek to join them. His feet were wet and cold, so Scratch and Chloride stood watch while he took his boots and socks off, wrung out the socks, and spread them on a rock to dry for a few minutes. He rubbed his feet to warm them up.
Did you get a good look at any of the varmints?
Afraid not. They had bandanas over their faces and their hats pulled down low. There was nothing special about their clothes either.
See? See? Just like I told folks in town. Some of them didn't believe me, but you seen the thieving buzzards with your own eyes.
If they were part of the gang.
Well, who else would ambush us to keep you from trying to track them down? Them devils are the only ones who'd have any reason to do that.
He's right. Question is, did they follow us out here from town? Or did the big boss leave some of them here to keep watch and bushwhack anybody who came poking around?
I don't know, but I reckon we ought to try to pick up their trail and see where it leads.
Bo started pulling on one of his socks. It was still damp, but he was too impatient to wait for it to dry fully. Horses couldn't make it up the side of the gulch right here, even with their riders dismounted and leading them. The Texans and Chloride had to backtrack almost a mile before they came to a place where they could reach the top of the ridge. They retraced their path, looking down on the creek from high above now, until they reached the spot where the ambush had taken place.
Ground's pretty rocky here. It's not going to be easy following them, but we'll give it a try.
With Scratch leading the way, they trailed the would-be killers into the rugged hills that bordered Deadwood Gulch. The going was slow. More gulches, many of them choked with brush, cut through the hills and formed obstacles. Finally, Scratch reined in and shook his head.
I lost the trail. We can back up and try to find it again, but it ain't likely to do us much good. There are too many rocks, too many creeks, and too many places where a fella can hide his tracks. My hunch is that they've done giving us a slip, Bo.
Mine too. Let's head back to those trees where they ambushed the wagon yesterday and try to follow that trail.
They spent several hours doing that as the tracks of the outlaw gang wound into the rugged area between Deadwood Creek and Whitewood Creek. This trail was a little easier to follow because there had been more riders, but eventually it petered out too, as the tracks branched in different directions, as Scratch had predicted they would. As they sat on their mounts, Scratch tried to figure out their next move and glanced up at the sun.
Well, we didn't find their rendezvous after all. Missed lunch, too.
We might as well head back to Deadwood.
And do what? How are we gonna earn any money if we can't find those no-good skunks?
There's more than one way to find the Deadwood devils. I think I know how we can make them come to us.
Uh-huh. Does this idea of yours have anything to do with us getting shot at again, Bo?
It just might.
Chloride had been arguing with Bo's plan all the way back to the settlement and continued to do so as they rode along Deadwood's main street.
Nope, dadgummit, I ain't a-gonna do it. I already lived through one of those holdups when nobody else has. You reckon I want to push my luck by trying to do it again? Besides, I done told you and told you the Golden Queen is a hoodoo outfit. Just plain bad luck.
And it's also the only mining operation that's desperate enough to hire you as a driver.
That gal can't pay no wages. She's flat broke.
She's still feeding the men who work for her, and they have a place to stay. Besides, if the Golden Queen is producing much ore, it's probably piling up out there because there's nobody to bring it to town. If Miss Sutton could get a shipment or two in the bank, I bet her finances would look a lot better.
Well, maybe. The problem is getting it here.
Well, with you driving the wagon and me and Bo guarding it, it will get here. Now, you can bet that old scroungy hat of yours on that.
Don't you go saying bad things about my hat. Me and this hat been through a heck of a lot together.
Yeah, I believe it. It's probably as old as you are.
They had reached the office of the Golden Queen Mining Company, so they reined in.
We can argue about Chloride's hat later. Right now, we need to go in and talk to Miss Sutton. Chloride, I'll ask you again to come with us. It'd be a lot easier getting the gold here if we have you along to drive the wagon. Otherwise, one of us will have to handle that chore, and there'll only be one of us left to keep an eye out for trouble.
You're bound and determined to go through with this, ain't you?
We need jobs, even if they don't pay anything but room and board. And Miss Sutton needs help, if she'll unbend enough to accept it. Seems like a good solution all the way around.
Other than the probably getting killed part.
My old man takes a chance every time he gets out of bed in the morning. Leastway with this one, there might be a nice payoff at the end.
All right. We'll give it a try. But when you got a bullet in your belly and you're breathing your last, just remember I told you it was a hoodoo loco idea.
Good Lord. Were you born with that sunny disposition, or did it just come to you?
Beau led the way into the mining company office. It was late in the afternoon by now, but Martha Sutton was still there. In fact, she was on her feet and had an angry expression on her face as she looked at a man who stood in front of the desk. He was young, around 25, with blonde hair and a tall, lean body clothed in a gray tweed suit. He glanced over his shoulder at the Texans and Chloride, but continued talking to Martha.
It's a good offer, Miss Sutton. I'd advise you to take it. I don't know how long Mr. Nicholson will be in such a generous mood.
I promise you, Mr. Ramsey, I am not at a point where I need to rely on the generosity of Mr. Nicholson. Or of you. Tell your employer that I decline his offer.
You're certain?
There is no doubt in my mind.
Ramsey shrugged and turned away. He put on a narrow-brimmed hat that matched his suit and stepped past Beau, Scratch, and Chloride, regarding them now with definite curiosity. He didn't ask them who they were, though, just nodded.
Gentlemen, if you change your mind, Miss Sutton, I'm sure Mr. Nicholson will be happy to discuss the matter with you.
I won't be changing my mind.
Ramsey smiled and went out, closing the door behind him. Martha sank into the chair behind the desk and looked up at her new visitors with a mixture of anger and resignation.
What do you three want? You're the Argosy driver who was held up yesterday, aren't you?
Yes'm, I am. But I ain't working for Argosy no more as of yesterday, too.
Lawrence Nicholson fired you because you got held up? Or because you didn't give your life for the Argosy Mining Company as the guards did?
Well, I don't know, miss. He just told me I wasn't working for him no more.
So you're looking for a job like these two?
Actually, Miss Sutton, Chloride gave us a hand today when we rode out to see if we could pick up the trail of the Deadwood Devils.
Did you have any luck?
If you call almost getting our hair parted with lead lucky. Four men ambushed us while we were looking around the place where the Argosy wagon was held up yesterday.
You don't look like you're hurt.
That really was lucky.
Quickly, Beau explained what had happened when they were ambushed.
We tried to follow those men who shot at us, but we lost the trail. Same thing happened when we backtracked the outlaws who attacked the Argosy gold wagon yesterday. Following a trail in rugged country like this is pretty hard.
When you said you were going to try to find the Deadwood Devils, you weren't joking, were you?
Yeah, we generally don't. At least ways not about the important things, miss.
I appreciate your efforts, and I'm certainly sorry your lives were in danger. But I'm afraid I can't offer you any sort of compensation for what you've done.
Well, we're not asking for any. We haven't earned anything. Yet.
I don't understand. Are you going to keep looking for the thieves?
Not exactly. I had another idea. You said you were having trouble finding anybody to bring your gold into town from the mine?
That's right. All my drivers have quit, and no one wants to hire on as guards. Are you saying that the three of you want to volunteer?
You need a driver and some guards, and we need jobs.
I've told you, I can't afford to pay wages.
But you said you've been feeding the fellas who work for you, and I reckon they have places to stay out at the mine.
That's true. You'd work for room and board?
And a promise of back wages once you got plenty of gold in the bank and the company is back on solid footing.
That's right, ma'am.
It's true, I might be able to feed three more mouths. And there's plenty of room in the bunkhouse out at the mine. But aren't you afraid of the devils? They're liable to try to hold up the first shipment into town.
To tell you the truth, Miss Sutton, we're sort of counting on that.
You still want to find out who they are and where they've been hiding all the loot they've stolen, don't you?
Well, we don't cotton to being shot at. Makes us take things real personal-like.
That's true.
Well, I suppose we could give it a try. I don't like the idea of you putting your lives at risk. But if I don't get a shipment or two out pretty soon, the company can't keep going.
Sounds like we got a deal then.
Martha stood up and extended her hand across the desk. Bo smiled as he gripped her hand in return.
My father always shook on it whenever he made a deal.
Your father sounds like a good man.
He was. I don't want to let him down by losing the mine or by being forced to sell out to someone like Lawrence Nicholson.
That was one of Nicholson's men you were talking to when we came in, wasn't it? What was that about? Did the Argosy make an offer to buy your mine?
That's exactly what Philip Ramsey did. And as for who that little weasel is, he's Nicholson's chief bookkeeper and secretary. Ramsey runs the office. Reese Bardwell runs the mine.
Yeah, we've met Bardwell. And there was somebody else in the Argosy office when we were there yesterday.
There are several clerks who work there, but Ramsey is in charge of them.
That fella didn't look that weaselly to me.
Trust me, he is. I wouldn't trust him, or Nicholson, or Bardwell as far as I could throw them. My father never trusted them either. Are you going to ride out to the mine today? I can give you a letter explaining to my superintendent that I've hired you to bring in the gold shipments.
It's a little late to be starting out there today. But if you could write that letter, we can pick it up first thing in the morning when we ride out.
I'll have it ready for you. Do you have enough money to eat tonight? I might be able to find a little money.
That won't be necessary. We'll be fine.
All right, then. I hope you men don't have reason to regret going to work for me.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Good night.
I hope you ain't planning to eat at my place again tonight. My cupboard's pretty near bare.
Actually, I was thinking we'd treat you to a meal at the Red Top. We got enough money back from Hanson for that.
Really? Including maybe a piece of one of those pies that widow lady baked?
Including a piece of pie.
Well, fellas, I'm much obliged. Maybe throwing in with you fellas is gonna work out all right after all. Until the shooting starts again anyway.
They sat at an empty table in a rear corner of the Red Top this time. Sue Beth Pendleton came over and smiled at them.
Where have you fellas been all day? I heard a rumor you and Mr. Morton intended to become bounty hunters and go after the devils, Mr. Creel.
We thought better of it and spent the day sightseeing instead, ma'am.
Yeah, that's right. Why go looking for trouble?
Were you the one showing them the sights, Mr. Coleman?
Well, ma'am, I reckon I know the country hereabouts as good as anybody in these parts.
That's true. Are you here for supper?
Yes, ma'am, and we can even pay.
I'll tell Charlie, and then I'll be back with coffee. It's fried chicken tonight, by the way. I hope that's all right.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Nothing better than some good fried chicken.
The meal lived up to its predecessors. Sue Beth kept their coffee cups filled, and when they had emptied their plates, she brought over saucers with a slice of apple pie on each of them. They didn't even have to ask for dessert.
Oh, I reckon that's the best meal I ate in a month of Sundays. I'm obliged.
Don't worry. You'll earn your keep before this is all over, I expect.
Yeah.
What about that hombre Ramsey? You worked for the Argosy. You must know him.
I collected my wages from him, but that's all. Don't reckon we ever said a dozen words to each other.
Is he gonna run back to Nicholson and tell him that he saw us in Miss Sutton's office?
Well, yeah. He might. He ain't exactly what I'd call a toady, but he works for Nicholson after all, and the Golden Queen is one of the Argosy's competitors.
How did Nicholson get along with Miss Sutton's father?
Well, Nicholson and Mike Sutton weren't friends, you could sure say that much. Listen, the Argosy ain't the biggest, most profitable outfit around here. The Homestake and the Father de Smet are both bigger, but the Argosy's right there behind them, and the Golden Queen ain't much farther back.
So, if Nicholson was able to buy the Golden Queen, his operation would be the biggest around here.
Bo, you've been acting like you think Nicholson might be tied in somehow with those road agents. Now, that don't make any sense when you consider what happened yesterday.
Yeah, Mitch Davis, Berkner, and Turley all wound up dead, and I come mighty close to it. And all four of us work for the Argosy.
I know. The question is, would Nicholson be willing to let some of his men be killed if it helped him get what he wanted?
You mean the Golden Queen? I don't see it. The devils have held up shipments from every mine in the area. Plus, they robbed some stagecoaches, too, didn't they, Chloride?
Yep. Fact is, they hit two or three coaches on the run from here to Cheyenne before they ever held up any gold shipments. They took the express box every time and killed the driver and shotgun guard.
What about passengers?
Well, there weren't any on those particular runs, which is mighty lucky for them. Because any passengers likely would have been slaughtered too.
When the bodies of the dead drivers and guards were found, did they have the pitchforks cut into their foreheads?
Yeah, sure. I seen some of the bodies when John Tadrak brought them in. Grisly work, I'm telling you.
But being an undertaker or mutilating poor hombres once you killed them?
Well, both, as far as I'm concerned. I reckon the gang decided they could make more money by hitting the gold shipments because the stagecoach robbery stopped after the other holdup started.
Yeah, I'm sure gold shipments are more profitable, but we'll see if we can put a stop to that.
They put on their hats and went over to the counter, where Bo took some coins from his pocket and paid Subath for their meals.
Oh, that food was mighty good, ma'am. We'll be back whenever we're in town.
Oh, you're leaving?
We've taken jobs out at the Golden Queen mine.
Chloride's going to drive the gold wagon, and Scratch and I are going to guard the shipments.
You can't be serious. With the Deadwood Devils still on a rampage, you'll be risking your lives.
Somebody's got to do it. I figure the three of us are just the hombres to stand up to the devils.
Subath had already put the money Bo had paid her into the cash box under the counter. She opened it now, reached in, and took the coins out again. She slid them back across the counter.
Here, take your money.
That paid for our food. Why are you trying to give it back?
Because I'm not going to charge men for what might be their last meals on this earth.
That night in Chloride's shack passed as quietly as the previous one. Early the next morning, they drank the last of the old-timer's coffee, then saddled up and rode down the gulch into Deadwood. Bo still had enough money in his pocket to buy them breakfast at the Red Top, but after Subeth's disapproval of their plans the night before, he didn't know if they would be welcome there. Instead, they stopped at the Empire Bakery on Lee Street and bought a sack of bear sign to eat as they rode out to the Golden Queen Mine. Despite the early hour, Martha Sutton was already in the mining company's office, and she had the letter she had mentioned the day before ready for them. She handed Bo the folded and sealed paper, and he stowed it in an inside coat pocket.
My superintendent's name is Andrew Kiefer. Mr. Coleman probably knows him.
Yeah, by reputation, anyway. I don't reckon I've ever shook and howdied with him. Heard tell he's a tough hombre, but I never heard anybody say he wasn't a fair one.
That's a good description of him. I'll add loyal, too. He worked for my father for several years, and after things got bad, he could have gone to work for the home stake or for one of the other big mines, but he hasn't. He stayed right here at the Golden Queen and done everything in his power to keep it running, even though I owe him as many back wages as I do anyone. You shouldn't have any trouble with him, especially after he reads the letter.
How soon will we need to bring in a shipment?
There's probably already enough ore on hand to fill a wagon right now.
Then we'll be back with it tomorrow, I reckon.
Mr. Creel, Mr. Morton, Mr. Coleman, please be careful. I don't want your lives on my conscience.
Don't worry, Miss Sutton. It's our responsibility. We know what we're getting into.
Heap of trouble. That's what we're likely getting into. You fellas believe in jumping right into the fire, don't you? Ride out to the mine today, get ourselves killed tomorrow trying to deliver that gold.
We hired on to bring the gold into town. There's no point in waiting, is there?
No, I reckon not.
They mounted up. As they rode out of town, they passed the Argosy Mining Company office. Lawrence Nicholson and Philip Ramsey were just going inside. Both men paused to look at the Texans and their elderly companion. Nicholson gave them a curt nod. Ramsey merely watched them with a speculative expression on his narrow face. As they started up Deadwood Gulch, Scratch dug the sack of bear sign out of his saddlebags and took one of the donuts from it. He passed the sack to Bo and Chloride in turn.
That's mighty good bear sign. Helps lift a man's spirits.
You mean you ain't worried about getting shot tomorrow?
I didn't say that, but a man could die might happier with a belly full of this bear sign.
Maybe we better save some for the trip back tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a good idea. The Golden Queen's about 8 miles up Deadwood Gulch. The mine's not really located in the gulch. It's up a side canyon that branches off to the southwest. A smaller stream flows through the canyon and merges with Deadwood Creek.
Where's the Argosy?
About a mile on up the gulch from where that canyon veers off.
What's Nicholson gonna do for drivers and guards now? Has he been having the same sort of trouble getting men to work for him that Miss Sutton has?
Well, not exactly. The Argosy can afford to pay more, so there are more fellas willing to run the risk. Of course, it doesn't take very big wages to add up to more than the gal can pay right now, since she ain't paying nothing.
She promised to make up all those back wages.
Well, promising is easier than doing. And you gotta remember, until a couple of days ago, the Argosy shipments hadn't been hit. Reese Bardwell kept putting more guards on the wagons because of what's been happening to the other mines. So we all hoped the road agents would leave the Argosy alone. Shame it didn't work out that way.
You'd probably still have a job if it had.
Maybe. To tell you the truth, though, Bardwell never much liked me. And Nicholson generally does whatever that big galoot wants. They'd have found some excuse to get rid of me sooner or later.
Over the past 4 years, the hooves of countless horses and mules and the wheels of hundreds of wagons had worn a decent trail alongside the creek. The three riders had no trouble following it. They didn't push their mounts, but instead ambled along, taking their time. When they passed the site of the ambush from the day before, Bo took a good look around, but he didn't see anything he hadn't already seen in the wake of the fight. There was nothing here to give them a lead to the devils. They rode on, and late in the morning they came to the mouth of the side canyon where the Golden Queen was located. As they reined in to rest the horses and Chloride's mule for a few minutes, Bo studied the steep, narrow, and rocky ridge that separated the side canyon from Deadwood Gulch itself.
Somebody's coming.
Bo looked up Deadwood Gulch and saw several riders approaching. The man in the lead was familiar, and as the group drew closer, Bo recognized him as Reese Bardwell, the Argosy's chief engineer and superintendent.
Who are the men with Bardwell?
They must be new guards. I don't recognize them. They don't look like hard rock men.
More like hard cases.
It was true. The three men with Bardwell wore range clothes and Stetsons, and each had a handgun belted on, as well as a Winchester and a saddle boot. Their eyes had the narrow look of constant vigilance that became second nature to men who lived by the gun. The Texans and Chloride stayed where they were, standing next to their mounts, as Bardwell and the other men rode up. Bardwell reined in. His companions followed suit.
What are you three doing out here?
That's our business. We could ask the same of you fellas.
Last I heard, we had honest jobs. You're just a couple of saddle tramps from Texas. And an old man who can't be trusted.
Why, you gonder!
Take it easy, Chloride. I reckon you haven't heard, Bardwell. We got jobs. We're working for Miss Martha Sutton at the Golden Queen.
Marty? Why would she... Wait a minute. She didn't hire the three of you to get her gold to town, did she?
That's right.
Well, I knew she was getting desperate, but I didn't know she'd turn into a fool. It's all over this part of the country about how Coleman's tied in with the devils. And for all anybody knows, you two are part of the gang yourselves.
By jingo, if I was 20 years younger, I'd hand you your needings, you overgrown varmint. I never had no truck with outlaws, and that's more than you can say.
What are you talking about, you old pelican?
You know dang good and well what I'm talking about. That no good brother of yours.
Why, you old...
Bardwell started to swing down from his horse, but before he could dismount, one of the men with him edged his horse up alongside.
Probably ought to forget about it, boss. Mr. Nicholson's expecting you, and he won't like it if you're late.
I suppose you're right. But you just watch your mouth, old man. Keep running it, and you're liable to be sorry.
Bardwell and the men with him rode past and headed on down the gulch toward the settlement. Bardwell glanced back one last time to glare at the Texans and Chloride.
Sorry about that, boys. Almost talked my way into a ruckus, didn't I?
We couldn't have stopped Bardwell if he'd gone after you. Not with our fists, anyway. That means guns would have had to be involved, and then those other hombres would have taken a hand.
Could have been bullets flying everywhere, Chloride.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm a mite too touchy. Always have been. Bardwell just rubs me the wrong way, though.
I understand the feeling. Let's get going.
They forded the creek and headed up the narrow, twisting side canyon toward the Golden Queen.
What was that about Bardwell's brother?
Well, there was a rumor going around the camp that he had a brother who was an owl hoot down Kansas way. Nobody would ask him about it to his face.
Yeah, I reckon not. That hombre's fists are big enough he can knock down a door with them.
Well, anyway, Some folks said that the law finally caught up to Bardwell's brother and hanged him, whilst others claimed him and his gang got away and disappeared. I don't know which is true, or if Bardwell even had an Al Hoot brother to start with. I was just trying to stick a burr under his saddle.
I saw the look on his face when you brought up his brother. I'd say you succeeded, Chloride. And I'd say there must be something to the story, too. Otherwise, it wouldn't have bothered him so much.
Well, I reckon you're right. If it was a lie, he wouldn't have gotten so darn mad.
That's sort of interesting.
You mean the way a gang of outlaws shows up and starts raising hell in the same area where Bardwell's working as a mine superintendent? Yeah, interesting is the word for it, all right. How come you didn't say anything about Bardwell's brother before now, Chloride?
Well, nobody asked me now, did they?
No, I reckon not. That's coming from the mine?
Yeah, they're probably using that donkey engine to haul ore cars out of the shaft. All the mines in these parts started out as placer outfits, since the first prospectors panned for gold in the creeks, just like the fellas did in the California rivers back in 49. The bigger operators come in, bought up claims and built flumes and long toms to wash more gravel from the stream beds. But at the same time, they were starting to dig into the slopes, too, hoping to find the quartz loads those flecks of gold in the creeks came from.
That's the usual pattern when there's a gold strike, all right.
Yeah, but the loads here in the Black Hills ain't like the ones anywhere else. Most places, if you find a pocket of gold-bearing ore, you can make a pretty good guess which way it's going to run. Not around here. A pocket or a ledge can run any which way around here, which is why you got tunnels branching every which way underground. The placer gold's just about played out now. There's just enough left so that most of the outfits keep a sluice going to get as much dust as they can. But mostly now, they're after ore.
And it takes a big company to do that effectively. A lone miner with a shovel and a pickaxe can't dig out enough gold to make the effort worth his while.
Oh, yeah. It didn't take long for all the little fellas to get crowded out. A lot of them wound up selling their claims for little or nothing, then staying on to work for wages from the big outfits.
Yeah, we saw the same thing happen in California and Nevada. And when we moseyed up here to Deadwood a few years back, we could tell it was going to be the same story all over again. That's why we didn't bother staying around and breaking our backs looking for gold.
They rode around a bend and saw the mine buildings up ahead on their right. The bunkhouse, cook shack, and mess hall were on the fairly level ground at the bottom of the canyon, along with a sturdy log structure that housed the superintendent's quarters. The mill was built on the slope, at the head of the main shaft sunk into the ridge. A few smaller storage buildings were scattered around, and Bo spotted a squat building made of thick logs 100 yards up the canyon. That would be where the supply of blasting powder was kept. Bo saw a corral with a dozen mules in it, and a couple of empty wagons were parked next to the enclosure. He pointed them out to Scratch and Chloride.
I guess we'll be using one of those to haul the gold.
Can you handle a wagon like that, old-timer?
There you go with that old-timer business again. You ain't no spring chicken, and I can handle anything with four wheels and mules hitched to it.
Bo grinned as he turned his horse toward the superintendent's house.
We better find Andrew Kiefer and give him Miss Sutton's letter before he starts wondering who we are and gets nervous.
As they rode up to the house, the door opened and a stocky, balding man with bushy, rust-colored side whiskers stepped out with a shotgun in his hands. He pointed the greener at the newcomers.
If you've come to rob us, you damn devils, I'll blow you right out of your saddles.
Take it easy, mister. We're not here to rob anybody, and we're sure not members of the Deadwood Devils. Are you Andrew Kiefer?
I'm Kiefer. Who in blazes are you?
This is Scratch Morton and Chloride Coleman. My name's Bo Creel. Miss Sutton sent us out here from Deadwood to pick up a shipment of ore and take it back to the bank.
Coleman, I know you. You drive for the Argosy.
Drove. I don't work for Nicholson no more.
What happened?
You haven't heard about the Argosy gold wagon being held up a couple of days ago?
Nobody from out here has been to town and back the past few days. No reason to go. Nobody's got any money to spend. How do I know you're who you say you are?
Miss Sutton sent a letter with us. If you'll let me reach inside my coat without your trigger finger getting too itchy, I'll get it for you.
All right, go ahead, but be careful now.
Slowly, Bo reached inside his coat and drew Martha's letter from the pocket. He brought his horse closer to the porch and held out the paper. Kiefer lowered the shotgun again and stepped up to take it. Kiefer looked at the wax seal, no doubt recognizing it. He tucked the scatter gun under his arm, broke the seal, and unfolded the letter. His eyes scanned it quickly, and as he read, Bo saw him relax a little.
Well, it appears you're who you say you are.
Kiefer folded the letter and stuck it in a pocket in his brown corduroy trousers. He also wore work boots, a gray wool shirt, and a brown vest. He was so short and stocky that he appeared to be almost as wide as he was tall. But he wasn't fat, rather thick with muscle instead.
Come on inside. You can put your horses and that mule in the corral later.
The three men dismounted, tied their reins to porch posts, and followed Kiefer into the sturdy log building. A fire crackled in the fireplace, combating the November chill that seeped in from outside. Kiefer had a fire going in a cast iron stove, too, with a coffee pot sitting on top of it. This front room was an office, with a desk cluttered with maps, diagrams, ledger books, and assorted paperwork. There was an armchair in front of the desk and a sofa against the wall opposite the fireplace.
Coffee? That was probably a pretty cold ride from town.
It was. Coffee sounds good.
When Kiefer had filled 10 cups for all of them, he went behind the desk and waved for his visitors to have a seat. Bo took the armchair, while Scratch and Chloride sat on the sofa.
Tell me about what happened to the Argosy Gold wagon.
Chloride told the story of the holdup. Then Bo took up the tale of their efforts the previous day to follow the trail of the road agents, including the ambush attempt.
Sounds to me like you fellas were mighty lucky not to wind up with pitchforks carved on your foreheads.
I thought the same thing.
I have to admit, I'm a little surprised the Argosy got hit. I was beginning to think the devils wouldn't go after it, but I suppose it was just a matter of time.
Maybe. We're hoping we'll have another crack at the varmints.
Wait just a blessed minute. You're not telling me that you plan to use our gold wagon as bait for a trap, are you? I won't stand for that.
No, sir, that's not what I meant. Scratch and Chloride and I will do our dead-level best to get Miss Sutton's gold to town, just like we signed on to do. But considering how many times the shipments from the Golden Queen have been hit already, it seems likely the devils will come after us again. Maybe not on this run, but sooner or later they will.
And when they do, we're going to give them a hot lead welcome. You can count on that.
I see what you mean. But what makes you think the three of you can stop the devils from stealing the gold when nobody else has been able to?
We stopped old Santa Anna from running roughshod over Texas, and the odds were against us and the rest of Sam Houston's boys. I reckon we can handle a bunch of no-account owl hoots.
See, there's a difference. You Texas lads caught the Mexicans sleeping, as I recall. The devils of Deadwood Gulch will be ready for trouble. They'll be bringing it with them, in fact.
We'll just have to get the jump on them somehow. In the meantime, Miss Sutton seemed to think you'd have enough gold on hand to make a shipment right away.
That's true. I have a few bags of dust in the safe, and we've milled enough ore to make up two loads. Better not try to get it all to town at once, though. I don't want to risk everything.
That's good. One wagon at a time is plenty. Maybe you can get the shipment loaded this afternoon, and we can start for Deadwood first thing in the morning.
Sounds fine to me. There are a few empty bunks in the bunkhouse, and you'll eat in the mess hall with the rest of the men. Welcome to the Golden Queen. We're glad to have you with us, gentlemen. Even though it might not be for very long, if those blasted devils have anything to say about it.
Chloride was in his element here. He supervised the loading of the gold wagon during the afternoon. The raw ore had already been run through the stamp mill to break it up, and then processed with mercury to free the gold from the quartz in which it was embedded. The resulting ore, even though it would be refined more later on, was mostly gold and was formed into rough bars by melting and casting it. Workers at the mine stacked those bars into crates, and then the crates were loaded into the wagon. The heavy canvas bags of gold dust from the placer operation were stowed away in a locked compartment under the wagon seat. Kiefer picked some of his most trustworthy men to stand guard over the wagon during the night. Everyone who worked at the Golden Queen was pretty reliable, he explained to the Texans and Chloride. Otherwise, they would have deserted Martha Sutton. But a wagon full of gold was a tempting thing, even for the most honest man. Bo agreed, and for that reason, he and Scratch took turns checking on the wagon from time to time during the night. They got plenty of sleep, though. The mine's bunkhouse was as comfortable as the bunkhouses they had stayed in on numerous ranches, and were rested and ready to go the next morning after a hearty breakfast in the mess hall. Chloride hitched up the team himself, checking every bit of harness.
Worn leather's fouled up many a man in times of trouble.
Bo and Scratch saddled their horses. Instead of riding in the wagon, they would be mounted if the need arose. They were armed with their usual weapons, and they borrowed a couple of shotguns from the rack in Kiefer's office and placed them in the wagon. When the wagon was ready to roll, Kiefer came outside to say so long. A number of the miners emerged from the shaft and the mill to watch, too. Their livelihoods were riding on that wagon. Floride climbed onto the wagon seat and grasped the reins. Bo and Scratch swung up into their saddles.
Good luck be with you, men. It's not too late to send a couple of fellas with you as extra guards.
No offense, Mr. Kiefer, but then we'd have to look out for them, too, as well as the gold. And from the looks of it, your crew here is mighty thin. You probably need every man you got just to keep the operation going.
Well, that's true. Some of the men quit when Miss Sutton started having trouble paying them. I can't blame them, really, but it's left us short-handed.
We'll be back tomorrow.
Good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
It's not the creek I'm worried about.
Kiefer stepped back and raised the hand in farewell. Chloride slapped the lines against the backs of the team, and the wagon lurched into motion. Bo and Scratch returned Kiefer's wave and rode after the vehicle. Their Winchesters rested across the saddles in front of them, rather than in the sheaths strapped to the horses. If they needed the rifles, chances were they would need them in a hurry. Bo and Scratch split up and flanked the wagon as it left the Golden Queen behind them. The trail was wide enough for this escort arrangement in many places, although at times they would have to ride one in front and one behind the wagon, where the path narrowed down.
I hope you fellas are planning on keeping your eyes open. Our best chance of getting through alive is if you spot them devils before they open fire on us.
You ain't telling us anything we don't already know.
If there's any shooting, don't whip up the team and try to outrun the trouble. You couldn't do it with an empty wagon, and you sure can't with one loaded down heavy like this one. You'll be better off stopping and taking cover under the wagon instead.
What'll the two of you be doing while I'm hunkering down?
That depends on the situation.
But you can figure we'll be trying to kill as many of those varmints as we can.
Chloride nodded and fell silent. Bo could tell from the tense look on his leathery face that the old-timer was worried. Under the circumstances, only a fool wouldn't be a mite nervous. There were dozens of places where some owl hoot with a pair of field glasses could be hidden, watching the Golden Queen to see when the wagon left. It was possible somebody was riding to carry word of the shipment to the rest of the gang right now. As they reached the end of the canyon and started down the gulch toward Deadwood, Bo was alert for trouble, and his eyes, keen despite his age, never stopped moving. His gaze roamed over the thickly wooded walls of the gulch, watching for the sun's split-second reflection on metal, or movement where everything should be still, or any other indication that things were not as they should be. Early that morning, as they were getting ready to go, their breath had fogged thickly in front of their faces in the cold air. By now, the sun had risen high enough that the temperature had warmed a little, especially here in the middle of the gulch next to the creek. Up ahead on the left, a tall rocky outcropping loomed up and cast a thick shadow over a brushy area at the base of the slope. The sun didn't penetrate there. Bo's eyes narrowed as he spotted what looked like a tiny puff of smoke drifting over that brush. It wasn't smoke at all, he realized. It was somebody's breath fogging up, because the air under that big slab of rock was a little colder, just cold enough to cause that telltale sign. And there was no reason for anybody to be hiding in there unless they were up to no good.
Scratch, up ahead on the left, under that big rock.
I see it.
Then the brush trembled a little, and Bo caught a glimpse of a rifle barrel poking between branches.
Chloride.
Get ready to move.
What, blazes?
Chloride, get down!
Bo yanked his horse to the side and snapped the Winchester to his shoulder. He worked the rifle's lever as fast as he could and sent a steady stream of lead into that brush. Bo went one way and Scratch went the other, so the outlaws hidden in the bushes would have a harder time killing both of them. At the same time, Chloride yanked the team to a stop, grabbed one of the loaded shotguns from the floorboard, and slid off the seat. He ducked under the wagon and crouched there as bullets began to bite into the thick planks of the vehicle's sideboards and ricocheted off the iron-rimmed wheels. Bo sent his horse at a run toward some trees. As the horse reached the trees, Bo kicked his feet free of the stirrups and went out of the saddle. He landed running and managed to stay upright without crashing into one of the tree trunks. Bo ducked into cover. He glanced around, looking for Scratch, and saw that the silver-haired Texan had splashed across the creek and gone to ground in a cluster of rocks that were big enough to offer some decent shelter. Scratch's rifle spoke from over there, blasting bullets toward the brush where the devils were hidden. Bo thrust his rifle around the tree trunk and opened fire, joining Scratch in peppering the gang's hiding place with lead. From under the wagon, Chloride got in on the action as well, firing both his shotgun and Cap and Ball revolver. The thicket waved back and forth as the Texans sent lead scything through the branches from two different angles. Even though the devils outnumbered their enemies, judging by the shots coming from the brush, they had chosen their position for concealment, not to defend. By spotting them first and not running, the Texans had turned the tables neatly on the bushwhackers. One of the outlaws lost his nerve and made a break for it. Bo spotted him as the man lunged out of the brush and tried to duck around the rocky shoulder. Letting instinct guide his aim, Bo snapped a shot at the fleeing man. He was rewarded by the sight of the outlaw staggering as he clutched at a bullet-shattered shoulder. The man made it around the rocks, but he was out of the fight. A burst of renewed firing came from the brush and forced both of the Texans to duck. The outlaws used that to cover their retreat. Some of them kept shooting, while the rest of the gang dashed for cover. Bo and Scratch had to keep their heads down and managed only a couple of shots to send the men hurrying on their way. The gang's horses must have been hidden just around the bend in the trail. Bo heard some of the men gallop down the gulch toward Deadwood. The ones left in the brush broke from cover and ran toward the bend, firing rifles and handguns as they went. Bo got a good enough look at them to see that they had their bandanas pulled up to mask their faces. A couple of the men staggered as the Texans' bullets found them, but they stayed on their feet and kept running, ducking out of sight around the bend in the trail. A moment later, the attackers reached their horses and lit a shuck away from there.
We done it! We fought them off!
Bo saw the old-timer start to crawl out from under the wagon.
Stay where you are! We want to make sure they're all gone before we show ourselves.
They waited until all the hoofbeats had faded away into the distance, then waited a while after that.
Darn it, how long do I have to wait here?
Chloride grew impatient, but the Texans stoically used the time to reload their rifles. Finally, Bo emerged from the trees and signaled for his horse. After a moment, the animal trotted up.
Can I come out now, blast it?
Come ahead! Just keep your gun handy until Scratch and I have a chance to do a little scouting around.
Scratch left the rocks on the other side of the creek. And rode back across the fast-flowing stream.
I think I winged a couple of those varmints, Bo.
Yep, me too. We're whittling them down.
Not fast enough to suit me. Yeah.
The Texans rode up to the bend in the trail and took a look. Nobody shot at them.
Stay here to keep an eye on Chloride and the gold. I'll mosey a ways down the gulch.
Bo nodded his agreement and waited there while Scratch scouted their route. The silver-haired Texan soon was out of sight. Bo waited tensely for his friend to return, or for shots to break out. His hands tightened a little on the Winchester when he heard a horse coming. Scratch rode into view a moment later and waved his rifle above his head to let Bo know that everything was all right. Bo turned in the saddle and waved to Chloride.
Come on, the trail is clear.
Chloride got the wagon moving again. Bo waited for him to catch up, and then they both went on down the trail to join up with Scratch.
See anything of those owl hoots?
Nary hide nor hair. That's twice we fought them off. I reckon they must have had things their own way around here for so long they don't know what to make of it when somebody fights back. Seems like they spook pretty easy.
They won't again. They know what they're up against now. They'll be better prepared next time.
On that cautionary note, Bo, Scratch, and Chloride proceeded on down the gulch toward Deadwood. The wagon couldn't move very fast. Noon came and went, and a short time after that, they stopped to rest the mule team and eat the food they had brought with them from the mine. The Golden Queen's cook had prepared them a lunch of thick slices of bread, bacon, and canned tomatoes. The rest of the trip was surprisingly uneventful. Bo knew the devils could have prepared another ambush, but evidently that morning's fight had shaken them enough to make them think twice about that. Around mid-afternoon, they spotted the smoke rising from Deadwood's chimneys, and a short time after that, the settlement itself came into view. People on the boardwalks gawked as the wagon rolled down Main Street, flanked by the two Texans. The vehicle was obviously loaded with gold and bound for the bank. Someone must have run ahead to carry the word, because when Chloride brought the wagon to a stop in front of the building, the bank manager, Jerome Davenport, had already stepped out onto the boardwalk to greet them.
I heard a rumor that you were working for the Golden Queen now, Coleman. Is that true? Do you really have a shipment of Miss Sutton's gold in that wagon?
What do you think? What do you reckon I did? Loaded this here wagon with plain old rocks and brought them in?
It's gold. We'll be depositing it, and we'll want a receipt.
Of course. I must say, I'm surprised you were able to bring it into town without the devils trying to hold you up.
Nobody said that's what happened.
You mean you were attacked by the devils?
That's right. But as you can see for yourself, we're still alive and the gold is still in the wagon.
Bo dismounted and looped his horse's reins around the hitch rail in front of the bank.
Now, how about getting some of those clerks of yours to come out here and start unloading the shipment? The sooner that gold's safely locked up in the vault, the better.
Of course. Oh, of course. You really mean to say that you fought them off?
See for yourself, dagnabbit. You're a banker. You ought to recognize gold when you see it.
A crowd had gathered around the wagon, and at the news that the devils had tried to steal the gold, only to fail, several people hurried off to spread the word. Davenport stepped back into the bank, while Bo and Scratch stood by with their Winchesters tucked under their arms, intent on not letting the precious stuff out of their sight until it was locked in the vault. Chloride watched over it too. A slight commotion down the street drew Bo's attention. When he looked that way, he saw Martha Sutton hurrying toward the bank. She had her dress pulled up a little so she could move faster. Her blonde curls bounced on her shoulders. She was a little breathless when she came up to them and stopped.
Oh, you made it. You really got here with the gold.
That's what we said we'd do, miss.
I heard people talking about how the devils tried to steal it. Is that true?
It's true, but we convinced them not to.
You should have seen it. It was a real battle royale.
I wouldn't go quite that far. They tried to bushwhack us, and we discouraged them.
There's no point in false modesty. You've done something that no one else has been capable of, gentlemen. You not only survived an attack by the devils, but you also delivered the shipment of gold they wanted. A remarkable achievement, considering the events of the past months. I'm beginning to think perhaps I was wrong not to hire you.
We're happy working for Miss Sutton. We intend to keep on doing it.
I understand. I applaud such loyalty. I would point out, though, that the Argosy can afford to pay you more than the Golden Queen. And no offense, my dear.
I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't try to steal my employees away from me, Mr. Nicholson.
Of course. Congratulations on getting your shipment through. And congratulations to you three on surviving your encounter with the Deadwood Devils.
You notice he didn't say nothing about being wrong to fire me.
Well, he was thinking it.